There are known knowns. There are things we know we know. We also know there are known unknowns.
My guest today in Known Unknowns is Kate Ford. Kate's the general manager of an organisation called Queer Space. It's a counselling service for the LGBTIQ community. Now, the alphabet soup joke has been made so many times that I guess what we can do today with Kate is go through it all again. But undoubtedly you have questions. Everyone has questions about what it all means, the LGBTIQ community. Which people work with which other people to achieve what sort of results and outcomes, and can anyone explain why it is that really it's become such a minefield apart from anything else in the cultural sense as much as anything else? Well, yes, Kate can explain all of that. That's pretty much what she does. 1300 222 774 is the number, 1300 222 774. Kate, good morning to you.
Good morning, John. Good morning to your listeners.
Practically every time we visit this, another letter gets added on. Mm. And a lot of people are going, what's the difference between intersex and queer and gay and bi and all of this? I don't get where the boundaries are and why these people need, with that particular orientation, to have their own identification.
Sure.
And it's become, for many people, it's just become all too hard. So we thought it would be useful to get someone in who can explain it all, and that person is you.
Thanks, John. Yes, it's an interesting phenomenon, the adding of the letters, because I think it points to a phenomenon that is basically a kind of lack of inclusion in mainstream. So I think what people are doing is trying to find a way to represent their particular experience and their particular social and cultural place. And what we have is a proliferation of those things as people try to find ways outside the mainstream, which doesn't fit for them, that enable them to produce a kind of social recognition for themselves. Now, the term queer is actually a kind of umbrella term which attempts to do that. So it attempts to say, let's stop proliferating all the letters within that alphabet soup and try and find something which actually is a kind of inclusive term for people who are outside the mainstream in terms of gender and sexuality.
And then there seem to be people who say, well, okay, but then whatever you come up with, it doesn't include me.
Yeah, and that's right, because in a way, it's very difficult for any category of identity to include the range of human experience in gender and sexuality. And that's something we're facing now as a culture broadly, I think, is and queer is an attempt to actually come to terms with that. We're facing social and cultural change where...
Fragmentation almost.
Well, where I don't know if it's fragmentation so much as the collapsing of the binary, which I think is a different thing.
Sure.
So the binary as in... you're either this or that. Mm-hmm. You're either male or female. You're either heterosexual or homosexual. And I think that binary doesn't hold in the culture generally, especially for people who are in their teens and 20s and 30s. So if that binary doesn't hold, then we are suddenly without a language to handle the things that are no longer in the mainstream. And I think all of these attempts... to say something about what identity is an attempt to name what we don't yet have a language for.
And this is all happening in a very short period of time. It's happening within one generation, within people's lifespan, and it's going from zero to a million miles an hour in sometimes just a couple of years.
Well, I don't agree with that, because I think what we've seen is a really incremental social and cultural change in gender over decades and decades, which you could argue, you know, happens whenever there's a world war. There's a massive change in gender roles. And so I think what we've been seeing is a gradual shift, and then certain shifts in the way that, I guess, things like modernity have put pressure on gender as a kind of norm. So coming out of those economic pressures, I think, the economic changes that have produced different gender roles, we see people going, oh, well, it actually doesn't hold. We don't have to return to those social norms. And then what people do is find a kind of different place to invent gender from. And I think that's really what we're seeing is more of an invention of gender because the binary doesn't hold in the same way.
Kate Ford is General Manager of Queer Space, and that's a counselling service run by queer identifying staff. And she's here to answer your every question. Now, nothing is off limits here. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I'm absolutely insisting questions be respectful. So we're not here in order to have a bit of trolling or a little bit of baiting or any of those things at all. This is a sincere and genuine attempt to demystify and explain issues in a way that hopefully help us all understand things a bit better. That's what Kate is here for. It seems, though, that the more categories, can I call them categories? The more categories are created, the more someone pops up and says, well, actually, I'm in between that one and that one. I want a new category for me.
Yes.
What do you do about that? For instance, I met some people the other day. For the first time, I was filling in a form and it had Mr., Ms., male, female, other.
Yep.
That was the first shock. And I went, oh, okay, fair enough. There are people who identify as other. And then there was the list of all the Mr., Mrs., Doctor, whatever titles you could have to book a ticket. And then there was one at the end that was just M, full stop. And I hadn't seen that before for people who didn't want to identify according to any. And there was a great long list. You know, you could be a lord or a judge or whatever. And then there was M, full stop. And I thought, well, that's a new one by me.
I think it's interesting, the question, what do you do about the proliferation of terms? Because if I take it back to our clinical work, what we the people we see are people who come in and say, I'm suffering from the fact that I can't find a way to be the gender I want to be in the world.
I'm sick of pretending, sort of thing.
Yeah, and they don't necessarily identify as trans in the sense of someone who wants to medically transition from one gender to another gender. So in that case, they are faced with the problem of how they invent something that works for them. And that is a question of language, but it's also a question of how they dress and how they kind of remake their body as a social form rather than the thing that they've been assigned. And that's what they suffer from, is the lack of recognition from the world of that process.
And yet we've still got lots of people living a secret double life.
Yes,
even
definitely.
Though we're far more inclusive and open and hopefully honest and sincere about where we stand on these issues. I was a guest at a dinner for, I think it's called the Seahorse Foundation.
Yeah.
And I met a number of people there who told me remarkable stories in confidence about what they do in the daytime compared to what they do at night or on weekends.
Yeah. I think this idea of we're more inclusive is, I mean, on the one hand, I agree. And on the other hand, I think that people have experiences often in, daily experiences of the sudden act of discrimination or the sudden eruption of hatred. And that makes people very vulnerable in their daily lives, no matter what they're doing.
Yep.
So you can have 90% of people accepting you, but the sudden eruption of hatred or violence is actually deeply threatening and can produce, you know, very severe mental health issues like very high rates of anxiety we see in young trans people.
But a common theme was at that dinner, a common theme was people saying, well, I have a very successful career in business or a profession or a trade. I'm not going to jeopardise that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to continue to live that life in my work, but in my private life, here I am, I'm a completely different person. I identify in a different way. I go to bed with people in a totally different way, and that would be completely unimaginable in my work life. I'll just keep them separate.
Yep, and that works for some people, yeah. And I guess the people we see are the people for whom there is a suffering that they can't quite regulate in that sort of easy categorical way, yeah.
Lots of people wanting to ask questions of Kate Ford, General Manager of Queer Space, and here to talk about what all of this might mean and in a sincere and respectful way, answering your questions. Ingrid in Carlton is first up. And Ingrid, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am a parent of a child who is 12 and not identifying with the gender that they were born with. And I suppose I'm just, how do I help them determine exactly what it is they're identifying as?
At the age of 12, Ingrid.
Sorry?
At the age of 12.
Yes, yeah. And I will say that it's my son, and he's been through a lot in diagnoses and trauma and that sort of thing. And this has come up in the last perhaps 18 months to a year. And he doesn't want to transition or anything like that, I believe. I think at the moment, the way I understand it is he identifies as both male and female. Mm-hmm. And I try not to say he, but I'm really trying to wrap my head around it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess that's the work we do at QueerSpace, is that we have a whole of family approach to this very question of when a young person says, actually, what I was assigned at birth is not exactly what I identify with, and then they embark on the process of trying to invent that. That creates a lot of parental anxiety generally and confusion. And one of the things that's very clear is that parents want or have a push to some kind of resolution, like they want a decision. And at 12, that's actually quite a difficult thing to get a handle on, because you could say he's at the beginning of quite a long journey, which will take him from 12 into adulthood. It will involve the emergence of his sexuality, which probably isn't quite there yet, or that he doesn't know a lot about. So he's trying to invent something, but prior to actually knowing a whole lot of stuff that he needs to know to invent it. So the work that we do is to work with the whole family on that, and to work separately with parents on the questions that parents have, which are often to do with managing the anxiety of the uncertainty that is created by your son's, you know, now in daily life, the uncertainty created there for him, and then the uncertainty that is created for you by trying to parent there. And I think it helps to work with people who we see people, young people, every day who are working with these questions and who have very many different approaches to them. And we actually are currently running a group for parents of gender diverse children, which allows parents to get together to talk about that range of experiences, and in a way to normalise it by saying, well, here comes adolescence, and here's this this little bag full of uncertainties, and let's try and work with all the anxiety that that creates in parents.
Yeah. And I suppose just not. I suppose I wouldn't want to think I'm rushing him. Just wanting to do your best to understand it, I suppose.
That's right. But I think using the word decision, I think, kind of shows that there is some anxiety there around, you know, how is he going to settle on something? But it's a long journey. And I think just kind of trying to take a bit more of a kind of let's hear what his process is, and let's hear the journey he thinks he's going on, and give him the support around that, and trying to give him the social bonds that will support him, which is other kids who have enough in common with him that he won't feel completely separate. And I think that's a key factor.
Well, that'd be great, because he's a little bit odd. He doesn't attend school as typical. So
And I think school refusal is a very common thing for young gender diverse people. It's one of the early interventions that's really important, and we and our clinicians actually work on that issue very proactively, because it's the beginning of some other problems that we need to nip in the bud there.
Good luck, Ingrid. Lots of people wanted to join in, so I will move on. JD in Brunswick. Good morning, JD.
Good morning.
Go right ahead.
Thanks. Look, I'm a lesbian. I've been politically active for a very long time in my life. I'm in my 50s now. The labelling issue, LGBTIQ, is really for us. It's for us to claim and for us to identify ourselves with a range of however we feel or our place in our lives. And really for people who are struggling with it, who might view it as a privilege that we could do that, we can label ourselves in any particular way. You know, it's, I guess the message is, if you can wrap your head around the idea that we, as a group of people, which I'm happy to call queer, if we each of us identify the thing that makes us feel most in ourselves okay, well, that's a matter for us. And if you can get your head around that, that's really cool, but you don't have to.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the being able to identify as that is actually us producing the social bonds that work for us. So if we say, I am queer, then there's a whole community that connects with. And equally, I am lesbian, there's a whole community that connects with. And I think it's one of the really important things is to acknowledge that it's social bonds that keep people mentally well. And it's really important that we are able to make those bonds and make them function well.
Absolutely. And for some of us, excuse me, it's a matter of survival.
Yeah, Yeah, it is.
So thanks for the work you do.
Thank you.
Good on you, JD. Lots and lots of text messages. Back to calls in just a second, Kate. But, I mean, apart from the predictable text messages that are saying typical ABC, politically correct rubbish, mm-hmm. why are you obsessed with 2% of the population, about which just what proportion of the population is covered by the LGBTIQ?
Well, I think the standard percentage is about 10%, but I think what we're seeing at QueerSpace is a doubling every 6 months of presentations around gender. And I think that is something that we may all, the other 90% may all have to wrap our heads around.
Okay, someone else saying, what about the asexual, which is a growing number of people prepared to say, I'm just not interested in any form of sexuality or sexual identification at all?
Yes, and I think that's right. And I think that, again, that's a kind of social exclusion because typically, you know, if we look back on history, we see a kind of pathologizing of people who don't hook up with someone.
And likewise, if you hook up with too many people, you're a witch.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so we have now a movement which is really about what you do when you're not interested in monogamy, but you actually want to do things that, such as create families, for example. So there's a whole range of sexualities in a way, which, again, going back to this binary, the binary simply doesn't fit. And once the binary falls apart for people, then people say, well, okay, how am I going to name myself and how am I going to represent myself to my family so that they can get a handle on who I am?
And then there's the sometimes I'm straight, sometimes I'm same-sex attracted. Mm. It varies. So why do we try and box people in? I'm paraphrasing a long text message here. So people at different times in their life might move from one identification to another.
Yes, I think that's right. And I think we box us in for some reasons that are to do with mental health and stability. So identity is a stabiliser in some ways. Being able to form bonds with other people in the community is a stabiliser. But again, it's only a stabiliser if it works for you. And I think the fact that people can actually decide, say, in their 30s that they form a relationship with someone of the same sex means that their identity probably shifts at that point. The word queer, I think, has entered the lexicon in such a way to try and prize off identity as this really strong, you know, you are this, you're not that, to give a bit more of an expansiveness to the range of expressions of sexuality that human beings have.
Bob in Tacoma, morning to you, Bob. Welcome.
Look, good morning. My thing is to add to what the previous caller said. I mean, The concern that I have is I'm a person in what they would call straight or whatever. I see everybody as just people. And I'm from a race background. My parents are Italian. And I spent most of my life being called WOG. Now, eventually, you start to call yourself a WOG. But WOG is a put-down. WOG is a nasty term that was used by people to put you down. And I see queer as fitting in the same camp. And so I believe all these definitional things they're trying to come up with, I mean, these are just people. Mm. And surely everybody should be just treated as people.
But when they're not?
Well, they are people.
Sure, but when they're not treated that way, Bob, what do you think's the appropriate response?
The response is to deal with the person who's not treating them as people because they are people. Mm. And you know, I have very dear friends that are, you know, you're called gay or queer or whatever, but I find the term queer, I don't like that term because I just think it's playing into the ignorance of people who want to put you down. Mm.
Well, one of the things that I think the previous caller mentioned was that it's the community deciding what terms actually work for the community. And queer has been reclaimed, really, as it was used in the 70s in particular as an incredible insult, as you point out. It's a word that's been reclaimed, and that is actually quite a powerful statement.
And WOG has been reclaimed too, of course, Bob.
Oh, look, I've had to explain to my kids where the term skip came from.
Yeah, but WOG's WOG's out of work and comedy and all the rest of it turned a really nasty word into a word associated with humour and a claiming of the culture. It's got a completely different meaning now to what it had when you were a kid.
Oh, I know that, but I prefer to refer to myself as Italian background. Yeah, I'm an Australian Italian. I'm not a wog.
It's not a word I use either. But you can see in your lifetime how it's transitioned, and what Kate's saying is the word queer is similarly transitioned. Yeah, as have the people. Mm.
And I think it's also to not lose the history of the insult and discrimination, because that is actually a part of our current experience. That actually hasn't gone away, the discrimination. Yeah. So I think it's a way of both naming the discrimination and saying there's actually a pride to this in claiming the history and claiming a kind of political power that comes from functioning from that position.
Yeah. Oh, look, maybe we'll all get to the point once it's all gone through the sausage machine where everybody are just people. Mm. And that would be really, really nice if we could get to that point at the end of the process.
Sure. Good on you. Good to hear from you, Bob, and thank you. Richard in Alphington. You're through to Kate. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning. I was wondering, the word gay was developed to cover homosexuals, both male and female. Why is it that lesbians are now treated separately? As I understood it, they're covered by the word gay.
Well, I think there's always been a separateness and a separate word, and I think it's probably again to do with the very different experiences of lesbians in the world versus gay men in the world.
So does that mean gay no longer covers lesbian women?
Well, I think I think the thing is that these terminologies aren't kind of dictionary definitions. We can't kind of say, you know, what it does cover and doesn't cover in a kind of factual way. I think people use it in many different ways. And so you might have a woman who is in a relationship with a woman call herself gay and refuse the word lesbian. Other people might say, I'm lesbian, I refuse the word gay because I want to emphasise the woman-to-woman nature of the relationship. And you might have someone who says, I don't want either of those words, I want queer, because it is a less fixed kind of way of talking about identity itself. There's that whole range within the LGBTIQ relationship to these words, and I think that's what makes it such a complex thing.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for your question, Richard. Max in Toorak. Good morning to you too, Max. You're through to Kate Ford from Queerspace.
Good morning. I was wondering, people, especially young people at school who face social exclusion, generally try to find them to be included in some sort of group or society. And with the queer community being such an inclusive community, and queer, trans, or the like, being so inclusive, that means that they suddenly are in that community, and then to be more involved, would that influence them and their sexuality rather than something happening more organically?
Hmm. That's very hard to say, I think, because in a way it asks the question, what is it that influences sexuality full stop, which I don't think there's actually a definitive answer to. So I think that the idea that sexuality is something that kind of is plucked from, in a sort of conscious or choice way, plucked from one's social surroundings is, you know, you can fairly much say that's probably not right. But I think in terms of what influences people, in terms of, say, gender or gender expression, I think is a cultural and social phenomenon. And therefore, because we all influence each other in many different ways all the time, we are beings who take from others and kind of adapt and change accordingly. So I wonder if the question is also to do with this, the function of exclusion, because I think when people feel excluded, they do actually kind of go underground in a way, and they feel that their particular sexuality or gender won't be accepted or won't find a representation in the mainstream. So I see this as a challenge for the mainstream, and that is, how can the mainstream open up inclusion strategies to actually include everybody, no matter what their gender expression is? And then I think you'd find a lot less anxiety in the mainstream as well.
Does that answer your question, Max?
Yeah, I think it's very, very, very difficult to answer the question in its entirety. But also another question, I don't have a huge deal to do with the trans community, but there seems to be some people who have issues with people who identify as lesbian and not being willing to be sexually involved with someone who is trans but has male genital.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be... How do you deal with the pressures, like, in that regard?
Yeah. Okay, so I think in general, I think the political and social pressures in queer communities are very profound, because when you have a kind of community that's excluded from the kind of social bonds that keep people stable and in place, then you get a lot of what is referred to as lateral violence. And so those things that are, sort of excessive judgments within queer community are for queer community to solve, I think. And I don't know that it's something that I can give you a kind of, broad answer to, because people's sexuality and their sexual expression is really one by one. Is that person attracted to that person? And I can't answer that as a category. I can only answer that, talking to individuals about that.
Thank you for your question too, Max. I'm afraid that's how quickly half an hour of your life can disappear. It's been really interesting, and thank you very much, Kate, and
thank you, John.
To everybody. Heaps of texts, not all of which I can read out, and they do still fall into those distinct categories that I was suggesting to you before, Kate, of people who say it's all just nonsense and politically correct rubbish and typical ABC to obsess over it, and other people saying thank you for at last discussing these issues, which are vital to my place in society and hardly ever get talked about.
Okay.
So there you
thank
are.
Thank you.
No, thank you, Kate.
John.
Kate Ford is General Manager of Queer Space, a counselling service for the LGBTIQ community run by queer-identified staff, answering your questions on Known Unknowns today.